This is Jazz Talk, presented by Melbourne International Jazz Festival. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which our festival takes place and pay respects to their elders past, present and future, as well to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the wider Melbourne community and beyond. We are honoured to contribute to over 60,000 years of music making, knowledge sharing and storytelling that has taken place on this land. I'm Chelsea Wilson. Welcome to this edition of Jazz Talk, recorded live at the Channel at Arts Centre Melbourne as part of the 2022 Melbourne International Jazz Festival. This conversation, titled Beyond Words, is presented in partnership with Multicultural Arts Victoria. Following a vital discussion recorded at MIJF 2021, which you can listen back to on the Jazz Talk podcast, this conversation examines the historical and cultural influences that have shaped modern jazz, blues, Latin jazz, and more. Facilitated by artist, curator, and Multicultural Arts Victoria co-CEO Zee Nzira, hear from panellists including Naisha, Craig Calhoun, and Danny Atlaw as they dive into a lively discussion exploring the connections between Eastern, Southern, and American jazz.
My name is Zee, or as I say in my mother tongue, Ndini Zee Wacho. I am originally from Zimbabwe. I came out to Australia in 2005. And the reason I mentioned that is it's important to locate and identify where you're from, especially given the political climate that we live in Australia. Now, we all know and are well-versed with the fact that we are still on stolen and colonial lands. And what makes it interesting with my story and the thread that I've come through is that we share that colonial history. Zimbabwe was was a former colony of the British Empire. We gained independence in 1980, and unfortunately, freedom is something that we're still yet to experience. I think it's been given to us, but we're yet to experience it in its fullness. And with that in mind, I would like to pay my respects to the traditional owners of these lands. And if there are any First Nations elders, I'd like to pay my respects to you and stand in allegiance with your struggle. It's quite interesting that we have this bunch of amazing creatives on stage. I'll introduce you to them in a few minutes, but the premise of this conversation is to explore the links between East and Southern African jazz, as well as American jazz music. We started this discussion Beyond Words last year as part of Melbourne's International Jazz Festival's conversation with the idea of decentering jazz music from the West and really planting it back in its origins, which is in the African cultures. Now, the importance of embarking on this exercise and introducing jazz audiences to this conversation is we all know that art is what informs and basically helps shape the culture that we live in. And within the Melbourne landscape, we have a large African-Australian diaspora that interact and engage with the Melbourne music scene. And unfortunately, because of the mediums in which they choose to play their instruments, we're often kind of kept out of certain spaces. And fortunately, organizations such as Melbourne International Jazz Festival are creating spaces where we can start to talk about these origins and hopefully introduce these unique voices into the music scene in Australia. Now, I'll introduce you to the panelists on the far right. Your left, we've got Danny Atlaw, an Ethio jazz musician and just an Ethio fan. Danny Atlaw. I'm still learning this name, but we've got Ndau Kacho. I think I got it. Ndau Kacho will be joining us as part of the conversation. He'll be playing the masinko, an instrument originated from Ethiopia. Then we've got my lovely friend here, Nyasha, fellow Zimbabwean. And we've got here somebody who I regard as my big brother slash fellow friend, Craig Calhoun, from the US but visiting in from Sydney. So I guess we'll start the conversation around our relationship with music. And we'll start it off with Nyasha. You might need to grab your mic. while you're doing that, Nyasha, when we were talking out in the back, we had a bit of a conversation around your relationship with music, mm-hmm. and primarily how you were able to access the genre of jazz music. Can you take us back to when you first had that interaction?
Wow, put me on the spot right from the get-go. Yeah,
yeah?
So my first introduction to jazz wasn't the jazz that everybody knows as jazz. My first introduction to jazz was when I was 2 years old, and my parents had this thing where every anniversary of their marriage, they'd watch back videos of their wedding, and they had a particular song that they danced to, like they danced folk to, which was a song called Pata Pata by Miriam Makeba. Yeah, so that was my introduction to it. And I think also kind of a way that I fell in love with music as well, because it was such a part of our home. And just hearing her sing those lines, it was beautiful. Yeah.
And for those of you that don't know, Miriam Makeba is a well-known South African, I guess we'll call her Afro jazz musicians for the sake of clarity for everyone. Amazing history, very, very politically driven, was very much involved in the anti-apartheid movement that was happening in South Africa. Very much friends and family with the likes of Huma Sekela and a few other huge South African musicians.
I think she was married to him, wasn't she?
I think so. I think so, but we might have to fact check.
I didn't know
that. Yeah, well, there we go. There we go. And then, like, as we were talking, Nyasha, what was interesting was, Craig, you chimed in. And you mentioned that...
Because I didn't really grow up with jazz. I grew up more with blues. But she mentioned, was it Ella Fitzgerald, wasn't mm-hmm. it? And I'd heard Miriam Makeba before I'd ever heard Ella Fitzgerald. And to find that loops back to my first experience of real jazz was really quite exciting. Mm.
Yeah. And it's quite interesting because I think that introduction... in a way, shapes your relationship to music. And it's always very important to be able to find those cultural roots in the music. And what's interesting, I guess, from when we were talking back then, Danny, you jumped in and you spoke a little bit about your ethno jazz music and the history of ethno music as a whole. Fortunately for us, Danny put together a little bit of a presentation. And that will kind of lead into the discussion that we're going to have. Did you want to take us through a bit about ethno music and the history of it, and then we'll kind of dive in from there?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. My name is Daniel. I'm a musician, for Ethiopia musician here. I've been Australia for now almost 10, 11 years. Yeah, I just want to tell you a little bit about the ethno jazz, where it starts. You know, when we talk about ethno jazz, we know, I mean, most of people, I think now, you know, ethno jazz, but just to give you some ideas where it comes from, you know, though. So that's the thing to today we want to talk. And when you say ethno jazz, it's a unique fusion of traditional Ethiopian music with the jazz, Afro, funk, soul, and with the Latin rhythm. So that's the traditional music mixed with the Western jazz. That's what we call it now. I mean, it's come up with the ethno jazz thing. So that takes us to the origin of our music, which is one of the great Ethiopian composer. His name is Sint Yared. He's in the 6th century. It came up with that because Ethiopia is an ancient country with a lot of history and music. So we started from a church, and the church music drive us to the traditional music, and then the traditional music come up to the modern age and give us now the ethno jazz. So Yared is one of the great composer in Ethiopian music, and he contributed for the modern notation system, I mean, what we call it now, the notation in the Western music, he contributed a lot for that one too. I mean, I can show you some of his music. I mean, I just brought one of some of his compositions, what it looks in a church. Just a little bit to give you that idea. It gives us, I mean, this rhythm, melody, and the scales, what they created, I mean, the scale he played on here, has contributed for our traditional music, and the traditional music gives us, I mean, what the modern music comes. What I was saying with the notes, his contribution for the modern note, I mean, he created this kind of notation on the 6th century, because I know the modern classic called music with the notation has come up, I think, after 9th and 13th century. So he was created this kind of notation on the when he composing his music. Let's say, if you see the first one is the dotting in the modern music, we call it like a staccato kind of thing. He created on that time, on his music, it says staccato. He just put the sound cut, you know. So that's what I could say, you know, he contributed for the modern music, for the classical music too. Let's say, if you see the rick-rick, which is with a trill thing, we put it on a trill on a notation system. So that's what it means exactly, rick-rick on his music, it says, it gives us the same kind of meaning with the modern music. So, yeah, that's the basic origin of the Ethiopian music.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because I think when we caught up, Danny, and you highlighted that Ethiopian notation of music actually started in the 6th century, and then Western notation, I think the first documentation you said was around the 9th or the 13th century. It really opened up my mind to go, wow, like what else have we missed in terms of the richness of what we've contributed to, I guess, the global music conversation. And it's important to kind of understand that, at least from my perspective, because identity is so much centralized in how culture is shaped through art and music. And we experienced that through the Renaissance and certain activities that were happening within the African context. And I'd love to kind of touch on this with you, Craig.
Yeah.
Because we spoke about, I can't remember the bass player's name.
Larry Graham.
Larry Graham, yes. We're talking about Larry Graham and how there was this incident where he played bass with his mum and his mum played the organ. I'll let you tell the story, actually.
He played shows with his mother. He played bass and they had a drummer and the drummer left. So it kind of left a rhythmic hole in what they were doing. And he is kind of really credited for this technique that we so know as slap bass. And it was a method of filling up that rhythmic hole by doing this, you know. So popping being more like the snare, and this being more like the kick drum. So I started on guitar, teaching myself to play guitar, and saw somebody do that, slap the bass, and I'm like, that's what I want to do, you know. And I spent hours teaching myself to do it. And then taking that rhythm of that African, that pulse, that was something that, you know, I knew something about. And then you take something like Larry Graham's technique and Stevie Wonder, and you get something like this. That's that rhythm. That's that African rhythm I talk about.
I think what's interesting about the slap-based technique, and this is something we spoke about as well, was how it relates to those African rhythms. Now, we couldn't locate exactly which rhythms it were, but I've got this funny feeling that they're probably more West African. And as soon as I mentioned that, Nyasha was like, hang on.
I was like, actually, as a Southern African, let me tell you something. Going back to what Danny was saying about like Ethio jazz and its roots in even just like spirituality, if you really think back to if we think back to Zimbabwean spirituality, right? There's this 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3 rhythm, and then there's a zino. I'll demonstrate. Actually, it makes sense. So they, because they didn't have bass and all the other stuff, we use our feet. So zino mwa manasave munduro zino mwa manasave munduro zino mwa manasa munduro zino mwa manasave munduro zino mwa manasave.
There you go. Yeah, and I think, I mean, when I was growing up in Zimbabwe, we had these events, and they called them jit. And I think for the lack of a simple way of explaining it, I'll just call them parties. But they really had a spiritual element to them. And the drums and the polyrhythmic patterns that people played were so interesting and intrinsic. And as time has kind of come about and we start to listen to modern-day Zimbabwean jazz music with the likes of Oliver Mutukudzi, what they've done is they've taken those rhythms, so like the stomping of the feet, the polyrhythmic rhythms that played on the percussion, and they've converted them into modern-day instruments. And that's the roots of what we would call tuku music, which is basically African jazz music repurposed from those traditional practices. I'd love to be able to explore with you, Nyasha, in terms of your, I guess, connection when you start to listen to those music. I have never asked you how long you've been in Australia, but whenever I listen back to music by Oliver Mtukudzi or any of the great Zim jazz musicians, there is a deeper understanding of what those rhythms actually mean, and I've never been able to articulate it. Have you ever experienced or expressed those things?
You can't. I don't know how to. I don't even understand the question. What is the question?
What's your connection like when you listen to Zimbabwean jazz music, having lived in Australia for however many years you've been here?
Yeah, so I've been here since 2008, which is what, probably 13 years. And for me, when I listen to like the likes of Oliver Mtukudzi and Yuma Sekela, and I get to sing those songs, it's actually quite interesting because of the way sometimes I feel disconnected, but connected by the music, if that makes sense. So like sometimes it's harder for me to... say, for example, when we had our performance last year and you told me to like relearn some of the songs, it was really difficult for me to keep pace because now as a soul and R&B singer, there's a certain way you sing a song. So like how he, you know, swings in the way he sings his songs was actually quite challenging for me. But then when I listen to that music and I'm having fun, then it's instinctive, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense, and I think I can definitely relate and connect to that sentiment. But what's even more interesting is, Danny, your relationship with Ethio Jazz. You've got your Ethio Jazz band, and you really create space for a lot of Ethio Jazz musicians by bringing them over this way. How have you found that sound and that connection impacting your community? When you bring those musicians over?
Yeah, it's a great thing. I mean, introducing our music for the Australian audience, you know, as a community is helping us a lot because it's created a connection between. I mean, people, they know about us, they know about our culture, they know about music. So that's helped us as a community to integrate, you know, to the Australia. I think that's helping us a lot. I mean, when I came, I think, it wasn't much. Even some people, they don't know even where is Ethiopia. When I ask sometimes, oh, where are you from? I'm from Ethiopia. Oh, where is Ethiopia? And then I'll tell you, and they'll tell us something, they know one thing, you know. They are, that's a starving country. But they don't know a lot of things, what we have, a great music, what we have, a beautiful culture. We have like more than 86 tribes in Ethiopia. I mean, we reach with a lot of things, but people, they don't know that. So this thing is helping us to integrate with the Western, with the Australian community. Yeah, that's.
Just have a quick question. Is there a common language amongst all those tribes?
Yes,
there is.
Okay. There is. Yeah, there is called Amharic. Amharic. Okay. Yeah. And more than 86 language. Not only Amharic. Amharic is a national language for the Ethiopia, but everyone, they have their own language, their own history, their own music. Yeah. Let's do it. I mean, we'll continue my stuff. And then the traditional music thing is helping to grow the Ethio Jazz. I mean, another thing contributed to the Ethio Jazz is the Azmari music, what we call it, the Azmari. I'm lucky today. I have one Azmari here. It's a northern Ethiopian people. I mean, they're using the masinko and the krar, which is a traditional instrument, and creating the music for the weddings, the war, you know, that kind of contribution on the traditional music. So we are lucky today we have Azmari here, one of my best friend and a great musician, Ndal Kacho. So just play something for us and a masinko. Thank you.
It's such an interesting instrument because it blows my mind as a bass player that it's one string and you've got all these notes that are coming out of it. So it's really crazy. I mean, we'll touch on stuff around the modes and the like, but before we actually get into there, I want to take a step back and kind of hone in on this one question that we were trying to answer backstage. And it's the question of, in understanding everything that we've spoken about, the rhythms from Southern Africa, the jazz funk fusion stuff, and the ethio jazz culture, and how that's evolved into the music that we hear now. How do we collectively define jazz from our various contexts? I'd love to start off with you, Craig. How do you define jazz? Like, what is jazz?
Really difficult to do, really. Because what one person thinks it is, you know, somebody else may think differently. That's about it.
So it's really about that perception and how you interact with the music on a personal level. That's quite interesting. Yeah. And I mean, when we talk about jazz fusion, because I think there's a history there that we spoke about.
The fusion part, for me, came with the introduction of the electronics to it. Herbie Hancock's, there was a song he brought out called Chameleon, and his background was jazz with Miles Davis and all of that, but when the synthesizer came into it, it just took it to a whole new level, and that was my introduction to it, and it had this sound. And the actual track was Chameleon. I mean, it was done on the synthesizer, and I'm emulating it. Mm-hmm. But hearing that for the first time, like, what is that? You know, never having heard of a synthesizer even, you know, but just hearing this really strange sound from this jazz, with this jazz. And that the fusion is what really brought me into it.
Yeah. So jazz fusion, the introduction of the synthesizers and basically the sonic expressions.
Sonic expressions.
Because, I mean, I think from my perspective, jazz has always been the art of having a conversation with other musicians, and that's just spontaneous. What do you reckon, like, from your perspective, how would you define jazz? Can you define jazz?
See, that's a hard question because I'm, like, that person that likes to research. From a research perspective, jazz is like a combination of different things. So, you know, scatting, which is like improvisation, and probably the heavy use of the pentatonic scale, particular instruments, particularly the horn section and the use of drums and double bass and things like that. When you ask me what is jazz, that's a really interesting question because based on my context where I was born and raised, it doesn't necessarily sound the same. So they use different instruments that might be doing the same thing, but in a different context. Like for, as a Zimbabwean, we have the mbira, and the mbira is such a huge contributor to how music is and sounds like for us. So that in and of itself is like a slight difference. But then, I don't know, because a lot of the time that would be classified as like world music and not necessarily jazz. In a holistic African context, would you say Fela Kuti was a jazz musician?
I'd classify him as a jazz musician.
Well, then, yeah.
There we go.
In conclusion, like how I've kind of thought about it is that jazz is like a cake. Okay, analogy. And it's like, so in order to make a cake, there's basic standard concepts. You need flour, you need milk, you need sugar, you need butter, whatever. But in a different context, you can have a pancake. Same concept, different way of making it, but it can still be considered a cake. That's why it's called a pancake. You make it in a pan. Same concept. But then you might add a little bit of, you know, to make it a pound cake, to make it a vegan, gluten-free cake. It uses different things, but it's still a cake.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I like that. I like that analogy. I might just borrow that from you.
Sure,
I might just borrow that from you.
Do your thing.
And Danny, like, from your perspective, how would you classify jazz? And I think your perspective is a little more interesting in the sense that Ethiopia, of all the African countries, was not colonized. So the way in which you've kind of progressed through your interaction and your evolution in music is really authentic to some of the cultural practices that you have. And how would we classify jazz from an Ethiopian context?
I think you already answered it. For me, it's a freedom. There's no answer for jazz on it. We are now here. We are in jazz. We are a jazz element. We just catch up. We just meet up today and then play music without any rule, anything to stop us. You know, we are free now. Just that's for me. For me, music, free jazz is a freedom. So
that's interesting.
That's
that
what
I'm
saying.
Freedom, you know, because I have a band called Brothers of Oz, and there's no set members except myself, and I'll just bring in different players that I want to play with, and with an analogy of baking a cake, I'll bring these people in. I'll say, here's a bunch of songs you may or may not know. There's no set list, there's no rehearsals, but we all play. Mm-hmm. And so I guess in that context, it is jazz, isn't it? You know, it's just that freedom that you speak about.
Yeah, the freedom to be able to express and tell your story in the context of many other stories being told at the same time. Mm. Like it's...
And I remember you might want to share the story that you had when you traveled back.
Yeah, that's right. So for those of you that don't know, I'm also a musician. Percussion is not my primary instrument, so forgive me if I kind of like bang on this and it sounds terrible. But I've got a band called The Experience. And the idea of the band is something that I'm still discovering myself. It started off with really trying to showcase that there are African Australians within the Melbourne music industry that are playing jazz music. And because of my position some of the things that I do in the scene, I have a certain level of access. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to create this band, showcase this music, and create pathways for other musicians that look like me to enter into the jazz scene. Now, as part of that, I wrote a couple of songs. And interestingly enough, another festival, Melbourne International Jazz Festival, booked my band and said to me, hey, we want you to come in and play jazz music. We've got Osekuma Beats, which is another Australian band, which stands for Australian, Senegal, Gambia, and Cuba. So it's just a collective of those countries coming together to form a band. And they said, oh, what kind of jazz music do you do? Do you do chinstroke jazz or do you do dancey type of jazz? That was the first time I'd been introduced to that, but I liked it, chinstroke jazz. At that time, I did chinstroke jazz, where you sit down and you really analyze every single element, and it caters to a certain demographic of people. Unfortunately, I don't have a jazz education. Literally, it's just whatever's in my head, I put it down and then hand it to the band and we play. So I thought, you know what, the band that we're supporting, Osekuma Beats, have really upbeat music. So I wrote a full set list of music that had existed in my head, and I thought, you know what, let's experiment with that music. Mm-hmm. So we played it at Leaps and Bound, and even though at this festival we had so much fun and the music translated across with the audience, I was not satisfied because the rhythms, the patterns, and the expression was really centered around the music that I grew up listening to. And the only way that I felt the message in the music could be translated across was if I had people that understood the cultural context. So I was in Zimbabwe in August. I took the exact same repertoire of music and put together a band in Zimbabwe. And we only managed to have one rehearsal. I sent them the music an hour before rehearsal. We got in, the band had listened to the music. But what was so amazing about it was because they had that cultural context, they were able to translate, and we had an amazing jam session in rehearsal. the band was actually put together because we were having a Thanksgiving event for my grandmother. So we performed at this event. And at that time, I hadn't quite fully comprehended what had happened with this band. When we then played at this event, we had so much fun on stage. I had family members who have no relationship to music, but understand the cultural importance of the spirituality in music. Wow. And I had a cousin that come up to me and went, "Hey, I really love your music, but what language is that guitar singing in?" And at that moment, I realized that I was like, oh, yeah, like the reason I was able to connect with this band was because we spoke the same language and we came from the same cultural context. And the way in which we expressed the music in Zimbabwe was completely different to how we would express it, given the journey that the band members that I have in my band have come from. And that really broadened my view on what jazz music is and the potential of what music can be if we broke down and demystified these genres. And as a producer, Craig, when you're producing music, are you thinking in genre form? Like, what's informing how you approach, for example, mixing a song?
Mixing a song, how the elements work together, the frequencies, mm-hmm. that and how they work, and what it makes you feel.
There you go. You know,
so that's really what it's about, mm-hmm. making that balance so that when you play it back, it provides you something that you're actually feeling and experiencing. So.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because I think, Nyasha, you mentioned that you're more of an R&B singer now. I would also add in rapper and poet and everything else that makes you creative. But what's your relationship like when you're writing your music? Are you thinking in those genres, or are you just thinking in a way as to express yourself?
Sometimes I have to, because of structurally, like how songs go. But I've noticed that when I rap, and especially if I rap in my mother tongue, which is Shona, I'm a little bit more free-flowing. Mm. Yeah. So the rhythms don't have to be perfect. So if I say, so I feel this real deep, see how that's so different?
Yeah.
In terms of how I've expressed myself, mm-hmm. just by having the first bar being in Shona and the second being in English.
Yeah.
I have to change the pacing of it. But yeah, it's very interesting how that happens.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting. It's unfortunate that we all can't speak the most famous language in the world, Shona, because you would have understood the polyrhythmic and the cadence that comes with it, and then how, when you then switch to English, it's different. Mm. Like, it's definitely different. And I guess from your perspective, Danny, being an ethno-jazz musician, and having close relationship with ethno-classical music, like how do you approach when you're writing your music? Are you thinking in the context of ethno-jazz, or are you just saying, I've got a story to tell and I'm just going to express it in the way that I feel in the moment?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, it's different moments in different places and different creativity to make you in a different situation. I mean, I grew up with Ethiopian music. I studied classical music, and I mix it up, you know, but I can do both, you know. I have that both feeling, but most of the time I just want to focus on the Ethiopian music, you know. So most of the time I'm with my scales, with the Ethiopian elements mainly. I studied classical music. I know a little bit jazz thing too, so I mix it up. No, depend on the...
When you were talking about how I compose, sometimes I'm composing just based on a sound, you know, and that's the fusion part of it. You know, I'll just be mucking around with a sound and something will grow from that. And it's not really about the notes, it's about the sonic character of it. Mm.
So, yeah, yeah,
that's
quite
interesting. From a lot of different places.
Yeah, and it's and the reason I think we explored this in the last year's panel discussion, and the idea of how musicians approach music and then how the audience consumes it. Because in order for the audience to consume it, it needs to be packaged in a particular genre, and the like. But on the other side, most of the time you find that musicians interact with the music from the sake of sonics, what it is that they're trying to express, whether it's I want to speak in this language here and then add in the English side of things, or whether it's just really honoring your cultural context in sense of this is my culture, Ethiopian music is my thing, and that's what I'm going to express. I'd be interested, Danny, because we were talking about this earlier, and we might open up after this to the audience. Yeah. I'd be interested to like explore or understand a little bit more about, we spoke about the jazz scales and the Ethio-jazz modes and how they relate with the masinko. I would be interested to kind of get a demonstration and a quick tutorial on jazz modes and, yeah.
I mean, mainly the unique part of Ethiopian music is a scale about the modes. We're using the pentatonic scale. Of course, some of the countries, I mean, like Asian countries, they're using the pentatonic sound too. But some of the, like the ambassel, the fourth one is different in Ethiopian sound. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a researcher, but I led this thing for a researcher, but I have never heard it. I only heard it in Ethiopian music. So, yeah, there is four main pentatonic scales. The first one, we call it zita, which is the second one is called Bati, which is a northern part of Ethiopia. We played it, and that's Bati is a place name, and the mode comes from that kind of culture, so we call it Bati. One is ambassel, which is a minor kind of sound, and It's a place name too. It's a northern part of Ethiopia. The Ambasel is one of the mountains around there, and then they gave it this name. And it's very different. And you heard this thing on the most of in the Mulatu jazz element is Ambasel. That's a great mode in Ethiopian music. So, yeah, let's jam on Ambasel. Sancho, yeah, which is when I talk about the Ethiopian church music at the fairest, about the Sintiaret, he's using in the most of his composition, he's using the Anchoye scale, which is we use it on the modern music in the jazz music, but mainly we use it on the church music too. That's Anchoye. So the interval is a pretty jazzy sound, but we created, yeah. Thank you.
Wow. It's so mesmerizing. Like, I think you've gone through four scales and you've been able to play them off this one string instrument. It just blows my mind. Thank you so much for sharing. That's amazing. Now, I mean, we're about to round off. And Craig, I think you had something that you wanted to...
I go on about the sound and sonic cultures and textures. And I just want to share a little story. And, you know, I'm not trained or anything in music. I hear it in my head and I'll pick up an instrument and I'm able to put it out. And I was driving one day in the desert and this music came to me. And because I can't write notation, I just pulled over and I wrote down the lyrics. And as soon as I got home, I picked up the guitar and I went up and down the fretboard and I couldn't find the first note that this song kind of started on. Went to the piano and did the same thing. A couple of years later, I'm in Holland and I'm doing a recording session. And they had hired a synthesizer. And this is my first chance playing with one. After the session finished, I got a chance to take it home because I offered to take it back to the store the next day. And I'm going through all the sounds and I'm pressing, you know, play a little bit, next sound, play a little bit. And these are sounds I've never heard before. And all of a sudden, I press this one preset, and that was the sound of that song in my head. And I was actually able to make it come out. And what I realized is that it wasn't based on notes. It was based on a sound. Mm. And that's one of the things that really blows my mind about music and why I create. When you were talking to me about, you know, what do I do when I'm producing, it's the sonic thing. Thing that really is something I just want to share with you. So.
Yeah, that's really powerful. Thank you. Any closing remarks, Yasha?
Put me on the thing.
You're
first.
On the
Come
stage.
On now.
The
skip
spotlight.
Me, skip me. I'm thinking.
Danny, any closing remarks?
Yeah. Thank you for listening, guys. I mean, it's a short time to tell about the history of the music. You need a bigger time to tell you everything. But one thing I just want to tell you again, I'm doing this thing before to introduce Ethiopian music for the Australia audience, so I'm just doing this project coming up. The classical, one of my teachers too, he is a classical pianist, is coming down to these places. So yeah, anyone interested more about Ethiopian music, just come.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Look, we could talk a lot about the relationship between these three elements, East African, Southern African, and American jazz music. This panel discussion is really just really designed for it to be a taster into what's out there in the Melbourne music scene. There's lots of interesting music happening. I know Melbourne International Jazz Festival had a gig yesterday where they featured Nigerian, Ethiopian music, which was amazing. I believe there was not enough room for the people to listen to, which is good signs. Craig and I are going to be playing next week. We've got our own little jam session.
Paris Cat
Jazz Club. And there's a lot of interesting music that's been played as part of the Melbourne International Jazz Festival. So please go out. Have a listen to what the local musicians are doing, especially post-COVID. We really are trying to reimagine our music space here in Australia, predominantly Melbourne, and we wouldn't be able to do it without your listening ears. So thank you so much for coming out today.
And I'd also like to say, you know, I'm based in Sydney, but I'm here, and I'm amazed at what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, you're an incredible audience, it's an incredible city, and what's really going on is really something to be proud of.
So. Thank you. Thank you so much. So we've got roughly a minute. Do we want to try
questions?
And have a jam? At this time, we might hear some vocals from Yasha, too. Like, yeah.
Look, three of those modes, I was like, I don't know where you would want me to go.
Maybe it's jazz.
And he told me, low-key, drop 16 bars. I'm like, how am I going to rap?
let's try something. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, just try something. Yeah.
Where the groove at? Thank you.
That was Beyond Words, recorded at the 2022 Melbourne International Jazz Festival, presented in partnership with Multicultural Arts Victoria with the support of Arts Centre Melbourne. Please keep in touch with Melbourne International Jazz Festival by subscribing to our e-news at melbournejazz.com, follow us on social media, and subscribe on your preferred platform for more podcast episodes. We would like to thank principal partners Creative Victoria and the Australia Council for the Arts. Thanks for listening.